spine
and sprocket.
We shall seize the bridges, it's all a question of bridges, with thunderclap surprise.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like... victory.
Your eyes never leave me, Merlin.
Can't I acknowledge beauty?
Can't you acknowledge love? Perhaps you ache for what you've never known.
Perhaps you lust for what you cannot have.
Cannot have? But you promised! All your secrets, you said you'd show me everything!
I've shown you too much already.
Merlin! You counselor to the king or to my sister?
At your service, sir.
Then answer me this. For years, peace has reigned in the land. Crops grow in abundance. There's no want. Every one of my subjects enjoys his portion of happiness and justice. Tell me, Merlin, have we defeated evil? As it seems we have.
Good and evil. There never is one without the other.
Where hides evil, then, in my kingdom?
Always where you never expect it.
That lovely scene was from the wonderful movie Excalibur, which is tonight's topic on Spine and Sprocket. I'm Jeff.
I'm Mike.
I am Megan.
And I'm Dave.
And we are here to talk about this movie, which came out some years ago, 1981-ish, something like
that.
Yeah. I really did my history lookup, background on this. This was a great movie. I really enjoyed this. Well, was it a great movie? Yeah, I think so.
Mike?
Not so much.
Oh, okay. Oh, this will be good.
Megan?
I feel like I wasn't as prepared as I should have been going into watching it.
Like, so psychologically prepared? Like,
yes.
It was damaging to you, or...?
No, not quite. I just was kind of thrown into it, so...
Like, someone's dad made you watch it, and you were just finishing the last 20 minutes when he pulled you down here to come do the show? Because someone
had
to go home?
Yeah, almost exactly like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't need to be prepared. So, did you like what you saw so far? What did you...
Parts, yeah.
Should we start with that?
All right, we'll start.
What
parts?
What parts?
I mean, I thought most of it was cool. You know, there are some fun effects. Like, I liked a lot of the extra green lighting.
Lighting, thanks.
Lots of green and colors.
Let's just start right in with the lighting, shall we?
The lighting, really?
Did you?
Was
yeah.
there lighting?
There, yes.
I thought it was at night most of the time. Really, really dark.
No. Was it, Megan?
Mike
no.
was watching an old Beta copy.
That's right.
Yeah. First, opening battle scene. Orange light mm-hmm. coming through mist with nights. Do I sound like I like the film?
Yeah.
With
I
nights.
I think I'm in the minority
in
tonight.
In shining armor. It's okay. And then, as Megan said, I'm watching this and I'm noticing there's nice colors and lights on everything, even the armor, right? In the daytime, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Megan's yeah. right into the first scene. I'm watching it again with her and she's like, what's that green light on the sword? And it's on the water, and it's on the armor, and it's that green light. Did you all notice that?
I guess. I noticed it on the sword. I didn't, and I noticed that, like, the grass was green.
Yeah.
I mean, I noticed how green some of the scenes
trees,
were.
That's what Megan said.
How verdantly green a lot of the scenes
green.
Were from where they were filming. And this was all filmed in England, I guess, on various estates around
Well, except
the
for the
UK.
Film towards the end, which was obviously Montana.
Yeah. Yes. Where in Montana exactly? Glasgow?
That scene was just totally, that just said, that I was like done with the movie, you know, after I saw that, so.
All right, well, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that, yeah.
So think of that. I remember seeing this movie in 1981, I think it was, with my dad. when I was living at, after college, and I was living in Madison, Wisconsin, and my dad would come up to visit me, and we went to see two movies during those years. One was Indiana Jones, and the other one was Excalibur. And so I don't think I've seen it since then, so it was fun to be seeing it again. But I thought the opening was really great because they opened with that great battle scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But right off the bat, the music threw me. Didn't really love it because, and I think this was popular with certain directors and in British movies. I don't think John Borland, who's the reactor, the director,
Borman,
was British, is he?
Gosh, I didn't look up that. He made Deliverance.
Did he?
He did.
Yeah.
Oh, he did.
It's just weird how the music they used, which was mostly from Wagnerian opera.
Well, Megan, what did you, you know the name of the song.
Oh, yeah. O Fortuna was used a lot.
Which one was
that one?
The do, 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 do.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
That is so cool.
Yeah, that's good music.
It was I wrote I, well one I said I remember this film surprised us when we saw it in college. We were like, because we were again gaming the D&D stuff, and oh, look how slow they're moving in armor, slogging through water, slogging through the woods. Merlin, he's slogging, and the guys are chasing him, and they're both moving like, you know, half a mile an hour chasing the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
They're chasing him and they're stopping to catch their breath.
Yeah.
I think my friend Rick had pointed out that, you know, that's probably what it was like. You know? These other movies are leaping around in this light armor when it's fully armored dudes. But, so I remembered that being one of the comments. And I of course, liked it then, and I liked it now. I did notice the opening credits. The font was really space age. Did anyone catch that?
Yeah, it was kind of space-age.
A land, and then a king. And I think they used the same font in Wizards, the movie Wizards.
Ah, yes.
With Ralph Bakshi.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, it went to Excalibur. It was all shiny metal. And so the space-age stuff didn't work at all. It really looked dated. But the Excalibur still shined pretty good, I thought.
What I noticed time and time and time and time again was how much the movie looked like Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Scene I made after many connections. Scene.
Yeah.
Megan, do you want to list some of those?
I mean, one of them was when they were in one of the battle scenes and somebody's arm got cut off.
Yes.
You just saw the blood coming out. I was like, yes, this looks familiar.
Yeah, she said Monty Python-like.
Yeah.
And then what was another one?
Don't remember.
It, you know, the peasants slogging around in the mud. Kept thinking about
the pathetic, the pathetic peasants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have an autonomous hypocrisy where one person takes it to work as the ruler and then we take turns voting.
Shut up! I command you to shut up!
I'm not a woman.
Yes. Well, I can't just call you a man. Okay, we can't do the whole movie, but...
Spoilers.
But isn't it interesting how it's hard and... I see that a lot. Monty Python and the Holy Grail defined a genre of movie, and whenever I see a sword movie, there's elements from that.
But it was, I think it went beyond that, didn't it? The way the arm, it had to be the same special effects they used in Python to get the blood out. It had to be state of the art at the time or something, right? Or which came first? Wasn't Python satirizing this film?
No, Python, didn't Monty Python come out in the 70s?
Well, this was 81.
This was 81.
The movie, though. The TV show was out in the 70s.
Megan's going to check Monty Python and the Holy Grail for us.
I thought it came out when I was in college, but I don't really remember a lot about college.
I saw it with high school friends. It could have been this summer. Yeah. But the classical music, as Jeff says, I loved it. I loved that boom, boom, boom so much. And however, I did notice it ended abruptly at times.
Yes.
Like Borman couldn't get it to quite fit in the ending of the scene. So he kind of just faded it out.
So, and this is an interesting thing. It's very normal now for a conductor, a composer, to watch the movie and write the music and conduct the music as the movie is being played for him on a soundstage.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in this movie is they just take orchestral music and sort of splice it in here and there.
Correct.
Scenes yeah. from Wagner yeah. here and there.
But I think he also envisioned, this happens a lot with me because I'm so creative.
you are.
This is, let's look around my room. you are listening to the music and you're getting an image in your head. And I'm going to bet Borman started with
started with the music?
You watch that opening battle scene again. The knights are there. It's dramatic. It wasn't the dun-dun. It was a different one. And he is, and then you see Merlin emerge from the smoke. And you hear that, oh, it was the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
Bum-bum.
Right.
And there's Merlin. Bum-bum. And he had to visualize that, you know, from the song to say, oh, this could be like the opening of a film about Merlin or, you know, the battle. And it often works that way, that I'm getting a story going, and then I get images that go with music.
Yeah. The Wagnerian, you know, operas that it was from, one was Siegfried, which is about, you know, it's from the Ring cycle. So it sort of follows along in this this whole mythos. And then Parsifal, there's music from Parsifal, which is Wagner's interpretation of Percival's quest for the Holy Grail.
Oh, okay.
And then other music from Tristan and Isolde.
That's what I was thinking.
Mixed along in there. And while I love that music, I don't like the way it's used in this movie. I don't like that I notice it in British movies. It's like they go to a storehouse of music and they pull it out and they mix it into the movie.
Which is what I do to our audio clips because I can't, I'm trying to get royalty for
music.
Well,
you do it so well, though.
No. It takes more time to find a free song online, and I should just write. I'm going to have Megan start writing music and with her boyfriend.
Oh, there you go.
Megan, what year was the Python film?
75.
Oh, wow.
There we go.
Before.
That much before.
Six years.
So I stand here in glory having known that. You know, when I watched it this time, it really did answer a question that I had about the sword. I've been kind of confused about Excalibur, the sword.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've known the legend, obviously this is from the Arthurian legend, mostly from Mallory's retelling of the stories. The sword, I remember the sword from The Lady of the Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And I also remember the sword in the stone.
Yes.
And I could never figure out which is which. How did one get to the other? And this explains it. In fact, the movie kind of goes through the entire Arthurian legend,
mm-hmm.
all 8,000 pages of Mallory's writing in 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is pretty good.
Very quickly.
Yeah. Megan, you said you had problems following things, or?
Not so much following, but some went so fast. You know, one moment Mordred was a little child, and the next he was an adult man, and I was very confused. Like, was some magic performed, or did... Like 10 years passed. Just go by.
Yeah, ten years.
Just
right.
By.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he did do that a lot, but it never really mm-hmm. threw me. But yeah, now you're reminding me of that little boy Mordred laughing by the tree with those all the dead dudes and the eyes being picked out by the ravens, and then that little kid is there. I thought that was just so cool. Did you think that was cool?
I thought he was a woman, but
I did too. I thought he was a woman.
I was like, ooh, which lady?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Which little kid?
No, it's Mordred.
Oh, Mordred.
Oh yeah, yeah.
When he shows up with the mask on.
Yes,
and he's
yes.
laughing, and there's the tree of death, or whatever they called it, and
Helen Mirren's son.
Helen Mirren's son. Yeah. Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
I think Helen Mirren's actually better looking now as an older lady than she was.
Well, I was going to say, one of my notes was that I think she aged a lot better in real life than in that one scene.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you see her as an old woman yet?
I don't think so.
Oh. Megan's got the last 20 minutes to go. But
she pulls a advanced aging trick there.
Yeah, but I would say another reason Megan got a little confused was she would glance down to be texting her friends.
Oh,
when they would
guilty as charged.
The film's moving so quickly, it's points. If you don't see the guy's face while they're saying Uther or Lexor or you know, whoever, wrong movie, but
yeah,
Lex Luthor. No, that's wrong movie. Yeah.
So then you'd get more confused. You got to kind of be watching, and she thought the knights looked similar, right? But they were all different.
I figured them out. Okay. Eventually, yeah.
Because like some had short beards, some had long beards. One was bald. One had a one had cool hair.
One was a Starship captain. Patrick Stewart. And one was a Starship captain.
I knew Patrick Stewart.
And Liam Neeson.
Yeah, Liam Neeson.
Oh, I didn't recognize Liam.
Yeah, he was played.
I have Dissident
Knight. Gawain. Yeah, Sir Gawain.
He was.
Yeah, Gawain.
Gawain.
He challenged. Didn't he challenge?
He challenged.
Oh, he accused his wife of Arthur's wife of lying, trying to kill him, trying to poison him.
Yeah,
yeah, he was the slimy one in this movie.
But then, doesn't he fight Lancelot?
Yes, he does. He has to fight him because he accused.
Now, my note on that is that the battle between Oberyn Martell and the Mountain was kind of a little more interesting than this one.
That's from the
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
I've read those. So yeah, not all of them yet. But
so this one just didn't have enough oomph for me.
You really,
know, that battle scene in particular, the duel between Lancelot and Liam Neeson.
Really, so. You know,
Did you like it?
I'm trying to remember it. I know I just watched it like 20 minutes ago, but
did she get that far yet?
Yeah. Lancelot is wounded.
But it's fighting anyway.
It's kind of forgettable. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Mountain and Oberyn, no, you'll never forget it if you've seen it. So,
I can't remember if I've seen it, but
oh yes, that's where Oberyn is dancing around the mountain and
the little light guy
keeps whacking at him.
And then the mountain.
But
then he
that.
Drives the sword through. Well, even reading it, yeah, it's pretty because you think the little light guy is going to win because he poisoned him, right?
No.
Pulls him on the sword.
Oberyn thinks he's defeated the mountain, but then the mountain grabs him, pulls him down, and sticks his thumbs in his eyes.
See, I did forget it.
Wow, I can't believe
it's a good thing to forget. Not a fan of Game of Thrones.
I only read that part.
Okay, you didn't see episode five yet or whatever?
No.
Did you love Merlin? Did you not love Merlin?
Oh, that's a leading question, sir. Please rephrase the question.
Okay, would you not agree with me that the greatest character in the movie was Merlin?
But what's with the helmet, though? What's with the goofy
helmet?
Oh,
I love that helmet. I got to get that helmet.
What, Ming?
Also, his voice was a little weird at some times.
The first time I saw it, I thought, wow, this is weird. And then this time I thought, this is brilliant.
Really? Okay.
Different than I would have ever imagined a Merlin to be.
Yeah.
Megan commented his beard is too short.
And he's not old enough and wizardly looking enough.
Yeah. So he did have the metal plate with the point on the head, like the skull cap. But, you know, really, if you look at the whole film, I think Borman did a nice job with this armor and the way the armor was stylized.
Very cool.
Rhino horns and weird very
stylized,
shaped. And then that whole Merlin fit with the thing. And I'm going to go along with Jeff. This is one of the, we used to say, like, name great characters in films, and this guy came up always, and his voice, he would do the voice suddenly like this, and then into this, and then, right? Arthur, you must have a hell. And I looked him up.
Really? Okay.
The actor?
The actor.
Nicole Williamson?
Nicole? Oh, yeah, it was like a, yeah. He was a really marvelous Shakespearean actor, marvelous stage actor in England, really thought to be the next like Olivier, whatever. And he had that temper, and he had that insane portion, and he literally did crazy things on stage. Like I don't know if he stabbed someone else for real.
Wow!
And is that frowned upon? Not in British theater.
Actor,
I think that's encouraged.
He walked out one time of a show. He was that kind of guy.
Well, he had acted in Macbeth with Helen Mirren, and apparently it was something disastrous happened. So they were not really looking forward to acting with each other in this film. But I always liked him. I saw him he played Sherlock Holmes in a movie called The 7% Solution.
That's what made him really famous.
That was. He
I
was
love that movie.
Great. He was great.
Yeah.
The other actor now who played Watson was, I keep wanting to say it's Alan Alda, but it was Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin was in that movie too?
Yes.
Wow. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Played Watson. But anyway, Nicole. Is that his name, Nicole?
No. You have the film behind you.
Oh, I do. Oh, I actually have a copy of the film here.
Mine's upstairs. Megan was still watching it.
Yeah, Nicole, N-I-C-O-L.
Last name?
Williamson.
Thanks. And
so, great character. I loved the way he was.
Well, Mike doesn't think so.
He was quirky. He was,
you know,
like,
when you said, though, when you said that he was a stage actor, because I felt like the acting was just too weird for me, and they were all shouting. Like,
I agree.
And they were on stage. And now I realize they were almost like they were on stage. You know, mm-hmm. like you have to really project, and they were just seemed like they were shouting at each other the whole time. Especially Arthur. Arthur yes. just was a...
Really? I thought yes. Arthur was not shouting all the time. The other knights were a lot. They were a lot.
Do you stand with me? No, we stand with the boy. Oh, do you want to have dessert yet? No, I hate dessert! Let's dance! I don't feel like dancing now! We are the knights of the round table!
So, yeah, the round table thing, like... I don't know. I just...
No, go!
He all of a sudden, he's done with some battle or something, and then he's standing there, and then all of a sudden he says, and we're all going to sit around a round table. And I'm thinking, that's how the round table thing got started? He just sticks his sword up and says, well, yeah, we're going to sit around a round table.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, gosh, that was a little disappointing for me.
Did you expect that?
I have to say.
Anticlimactic.
Yeah.
I thought it would be a whole political, philosophical. I thought there'd be
some kind of, something thing. Behind it.
Well, like the Lady of the Lake holds up a big table? She's already given him a sword. You want him to hold up furniture? It's one lady.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I don't know.
But now, the film had moments of levity and comedy. When he pulled the sword, remember what the dialogue was then?
Oh, put it back.
Yeah, put it back. Yeah, that was good.
I'm sorry, Father. Well, put it back. And, you know, which, again, that didn't strike me as Python-esque, although the battle, the arm getting cut off did.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it seemed very authentic and real. Like, well, wait a minute, you're a squire. Put it down. Put it back. You know, and I thought that was really, really, really well done. Although when he pulled it out, I don't know if you noticed, the second time, and the music went, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, bum, his arm went from straight down to, like, the sword straight up. I don't know, he must have practiced flicking that sword straight up in the air a lot. Mm-hmm. But, it was very humorous in that spot. A few other parts, the Merlin, saying, I didn't see that coming.
Oh, right or when he was trying to catch the fish and then fell... straightforward backward
into the water. I mean, all that, I remembered liking it then, and I liked it this time.
But I liked that because Merlin said when he was going for the fish and then he missed it, he said something like life surprises you, there's always surprises. I just kept thinking that everything he was saying was brilliant.
Wait, which one? I'm sorry.
Merlin. I just thought everything he said, I thought. Now, I was watching it with the closed caption on because...
So you didn't have to listen to the shouting.
Well, they had exclamation points in there, so I thought, And everything was in uppercase. All of it was in uppercase, which is a little annoying. Yeah.
Do you want dessert?
Yeah.
Now, here's what it does say on the Wikipedia for Williamson. He stopped performing in Hamlet, apologized for his poor performance, and walked off the stage.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Right in the middle of the play.
Right in the middle of the show. He had punched a equally mercurial producer, David Merrick, in a
play. David Merrick?
Yes.
Never heard of him.
Merrick. And that got him a Tony Award nomination. He did the bridge reading of The Hobbit for Argo Records, not the one that Jeff was making fun of last show. And it says one of his celebrated film roles was Merlin.
Hmm. Oh, well, that's good to know.
That Jeff and I are right.
Yes, that we are right. Hooray!
Oh, sets and locations. What'd you think of those, Meg? The castles?
Oh, yeah, the castles were very cool. Well, I really enjoyed the... the cave that the dragon was in with all, like, the ice crystal things.
Yeah.
That was very, very cool.
Didn't they use that in Superman also, that same cave?
I think so,
his Fortress of Solitude?
Right, yeah.
Looked really similar.
Yeah.
It was in England?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
it's really not that solitudinous.
No, it's not.
In England.
It's not.
Yeah. I had put down the dragon. Inside the dragon was cool, too. But that castle, remember when he was leaping over into the water in the beginning? It was like all rocky, and like the castle mm-hmm. came right out of the rock.
Yeah.
If you very really cool. looked, I didn't know if they built that or if they had gone on location for that. There was a nice Stonehenge on the cliff there in that same mm-hmm. scene when he leapt off. And the Grail Quest bad stuff I thought was really neat. Again, the tree of the dead guys.
Oh, yeah.
He walks up to the frozen guy out in the...
Oh, yeah.
And he's and praying. Asks
him, have you found the Grail yet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dead
yeah. That was the Montana scene.
Get that yeah.
It was. He was on a horse.
That does look like, he was on a like horse. Montana. Yeah.
And there was no trees, and it was yeah. Montana, and then there's a henge.
They filmed that in Montana?
Yes. Did I? It looked nothing like England. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know where that would have been filmed. But I know that scene looked familiar to me, so I actually did look up.
Yeah, it was in all the John Wayne movies.
Well, it was actually... John Borman was paying homage to The Seventh Seal, Ingmar Bergman's movie, The Seventh Seal.
Oh, what? Yeah. So which, for real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So which had a similar scene in it and is a... we won't even get into that movie. Maybe we'll do that movie sometime.
Sure.
Can I say something negative about the...
No, because Jeff and I really liked it.
Oh, no.
And yeah. They are I'm right. So,
please do.
Okay, The Search for the Holy Grail. And then one of the knights says, where do we look for it?
Oh, yes.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody knows where it is. What do you mean, where do we look for it?
Well, and then Arthur
it's
says...
the whole point of the search for the Holy Grail. Then you go out and find it. Where do we look for it?
Where do we look? I loved that. Where do we look for it? And then Arthur says, he says, portents.
Well, that's right.
Signs.
That's right.
And I thought, the knight is going to his map and thinking, where's portents?
Is it in Sussex County? Yeah. Or? I remember the portents. That was, at least that was interesting.
Yeah.
The response was interesting.
Portents, signs, Arthur said. You know? And so, they just kind of have to go off and look for it. I mean, that's like getting a Sword of Shannara with no instructions.
That's right.
Like, what do I do with this? Go find the Grail. Where is it?
Yeah, and I loved when the land was reborn. The king, after all the bad stuff happens, you know, and then the king is—he's not reborn. He's ready to go battle again, and it's the dun dun dun, and they're riding, mm-hmm. and the blossoms—they're riding
yes.
by.
Oh yeah,
the trees are actually blossoming, and I just thought it was super cool.
Yeah,
no, okay.
Super cool. Okay. And the way he kind of did this dark armory thing—I don't know if you noticed.
Yes.
And then when it went to Camelot, you know, don't say it's only a model. Camelot.
It was a model. Oh, oops.
Everything went all shiny, super shiny, which was beyond reality.
Yeah.
Right. This is not a historical film.
No.
Because if you look at Arthur, he's actually a historical character, right? If you studied the history of the reality of England at the time.
I've got it in a book. It's also about the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot.
No. It's true. Arthur was a real guy. Did you know this, Mike?
He was a real stand-up guy.
Yeah, the Romans had just left. Right.
Yeah.
See, he knows. So their armor would have been more as into the end of the Roman era.
Yes, right.
And he was fighting against the incursions of the Saxons, right?
Yeah.
Angles and Jutes and these tribes coming from Germany mm-hmm. and other places into England.
Yeah.
And so, that's about all they know. That's about all they know about him, really, right? So,
yeah.
But there is some historicalness to that. But I love going through the blossoms there at the end, and it's all coming to life and that whole over shiny, because he's making it mythic.
Mm-hmm. And it is. Yeah.
Well, and he even says at the end of the movie, he says, give me a moment to look at it, look for it. He says, I was not born to live a man's life, but to be the stuff of memory.
Mm-hmm.
The fellowship was a brief beginning, and it will not be forgotten. And because it will not be forgotten, it will come again. It's almost as if he's saying, none of this really happened. It's almost as if he's saying, this is a myth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this is a dream that we can strive for and that men can dream about and admire. This is what Camelot was.
Yeah. We should send Megan back upstairs for India photo time.
Oh, yeah.
Would you like to add anything else about the film?
Not exactly.
Acting, sets, costumes. Who was the good actor? The women? Were the women good or bad? Or
I feel like the women were pretty good.
Did you like the dancing? There was lots of spinning.
For at one point at the beginning when he was like, I must have her, it looked like she was possessed. And I was like, I don't understand how that
not attractive.
Hurts. Yeah. Yeah. I don't. But it's a little loony.
Because it's her spell, it's pure lust. And that's and that's one thing. When he goes on the bridge, Megan was like, well, he's riding on the water. And I said, no, you just, Merlin said, your lust will hold you up.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, your evil tendencies have a power. And then it was the dragon, too, which we can get into the dragon at the end of the show. But yeah, that whole bit, you know, that downfall of man and that dark side, and he's like, Merlin's resigned to that. Okay, you threw away all of this because you must have her?
Yeah.
Seriously? Yeah. Like,
and he's, so you're talking about with Uther?
Uther and...
And later with Arthur. It's like...
Correct.
And Lancelot. It's like everywhere he turns...
People are
flawed, and these flaws are ruining his grand plan.
Yes,
Merlin's grand plan to bring the world together to a peaceful.
And I always remember a line from Once and Future King who wrote that. White. Once and Future King. This hit me at a time in my life where it's just so meaningful. The whole book, like freshman, sophomore year in college. I remember reading it on a train and meeting my friend Marty and trying to explain to him the story. But the line in there about Arthur and the cheater guy.
Lancelot?
Yes,
Lancelot.
Thank you. This is recall issues. Was that Lancelot's problem was that he was in a love triangle. He loved Arthur, his king. Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He loved his wife, Guinevere, Arthur's wife. And then he loved God, who basically told him, you shouldn't be loving right?
Yeah.
And no other gods before me. And so that love triangle, and that just so struck me as his problem.
Yeah.
Right? That his own personal love triangle.
Yeah.
Arthur,
and it destroyed him.
I guess it's a quadrangle if we include him in it, right? And it destroyed him. Yeah. It destroyed him. So Megan's going to go up there. Thanks for coming for that part of the show.
Thanks for stopping me in, Megan. Yep.
See you next time.
Yep, see you next time.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed seeing Patrick Stewart. I'd forgotten that Patrick Stewart was in this movie, and I've been a long, kind of an admirer of his.
Oh,
but
gosh,
he is another Shakespearean actor who's who really...
Patrick Stewart?
Plays it up. Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
He was part of the Royal Shakespearean Theater. He was there when Ian McKellen was there and John Hurt.
Okay.
And can't remember the women... there. Possibly Helen Mirren was there at that time. I don't remember for sure.
But. And I had some notes on some great lines too, Jeff, that I liked. This one, the future has, did you say this already? The future has taken root in the present. It is done. Oh, no, that was when he went across
and took,
Egrain.
Yes.
Yeah. The future's taken root in the present. It is done. You know, of course Merlin says that line.
Yeah.
And then Uther says, looking at the little girl, she watches me with her father's eyes.
Yeah.
You know, that struck me. And then the little girl saying, are you the mother and the father of the baby now, Merlin?
Yeah.
Both the line. Mother and the father? You know.
Yeah. And that was Morgana, wasn't it? The little girl?
Yes, as a little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Merlin's line, but it is the doom of men that they forget.
Oh, that's when I wrote down, remember this night. For it is the doom of men that they forget. Oh, I love that.
Mike's just laughing at us.
Oh, and that's funny, Dave. The other one I wrote down was, what is the root? You were talking about the root?
Yes.
Yeah. Or no. Oh, maybe that was me. Wait a minute. Okay. Well, I don't know.
And then, of course, Merlin's, I ride forth to defend what was and the dream of what could be. Or you did that one already. Or no, Merlin says, a dream to some, to others a nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, when we were in college, we quoted that a lot. I don't know. Maybe, we are being immature right now.
And I like when Arthur says, I think he asked Merlin, where lies evil? Because he's kind of talking about how wonderful
philosophy.
Things are doing in Camelot.
Yeah.
They've got this is during the good times,
mm-hmm.
when there's peace all around and And Arthur says, "So where lies evil, Merlin?" And Merlin says, "Where lies evil? Always where you never expect it."
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good line.
Michael, give us that one. Yeah. And of course, the greatest line of all, "All now, Nothrak, with Vasbethud, Dothel Dienve."
Yes.
Yes, it took me like 2 minutes to write that down properly.
The charm of making.
The chant. Chant the charm, of making.
The chant of making.
Yeah.
So he was a druid.
He probably was a little druidy, mm-hmm. Merlin.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
I always thought of him as a sorcerer, throwing fireballs. But you know what? Coming out of England like that? No. Right? Wouldn't he be more of a druid?
Yeah, I think so. Now, I'm curious about what the... because there is some historical truth in Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
But where does the Merlin character come from?
I don't believe they had.
Is that just a...
No. Know. There was a Guinevere, they think, from another kingdom and daughter and... stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think I have the book over here, or maybe it's up in my room. It's actually one of these army painting miniature books.
Okay.
The Osprey series, Mike?
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, there is one on like Arthur's England or Arthur's post-Roman, but yeah.
But I love the way that the movie was about a man who had a baby with a woman. She did not know it was her husband when they mated. And then Merlin takes that baby, and then who then is the sister? Arthur. I'm trying to think, because it's a bit like a soap opera.
Yes.
I'm trying to, because Percival, Percival was Lancelot's squire.
Right.
Who am I thinking of? You guys talk for a moment.
I had bad lines, which would have been Merlin's spell while he crossed the bridge.
Oh, Morgana. Here it is. Yeah. Morgana bewitches Arthur. And they mate. And she gets pregnant.
Yeah.
Right. That's her brother.
That's right.
That's her brother.
Her brother, right.
And that's where Mordred comes from. Comes from.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's all this.
It is cool.
There's a lot of this incest and stuff like that going on, which is cool in this day evil stuff. It still is evil stuff. But, you know, back then there was something very verboten about it.
Why, are there laws against it or something? But it's classic stuff, and it goes, as Mike is even would say, well, it's beyond the film. Right. If you didn't like the film, but still you like the story of Merlin. Arthur.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And the knights and
the
myth. And I had bad lines. Merlin's spell while he crossed the bridge. After the cool Alna Nothrak, they just had Merlin yelling, "Ride, ride." And I just thought, oh, you could have wrote some cool spell thing you could be yelling, you know.
When was that? When Uther was crossing.
I keep going back to the Uther. Yeah,
Uther was going crossing the water to go to the castle.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it did look like he was just kind of on a rocking horse when he was going crossing.
Yeah, he did.
But you know, I'm trying to forgive that, Mike, because I like the film so much. But it looked like he was on a rocking horse.
I mean, they did what they could with the special effects in those days, and it was
I thought the sets and costumes were fantastic.
Yeah, were really good, and I thought the. I noticed that the battle scenes, how gritty they were. Mm-hmm. There was no music with them. There was nothing glorious about them. They were really in the dirt, men screaming, and not thousands and thousands and thousands like in Lord of the Rings or something like that.
Just small units of men.
Small units of men kind of wailing away on each other, whacking away on each other with swords and all kinds of stuff.
Trying to find that gap in the armor to shove something through. And then blood oozes out of it. It's very bloody. There are sex scenes in it, right, that I skipped for Megan.
Gruesome, the trees.
Picking the eyes out of the...
Oh, yeah, that's...
I don't think it was rated R. No, it was.
There was...
Oh, yeah.
Picking the eye out of the head,
Yeah. It's definitely rated R. But, you know,
lingered on that.
If you're watching Walking Dead today, folks,
oh, gosh,
this is nothing. Yeah. This is nothing compared to that.
I've got a what's up with that?
I mean, go ahead.
I guess
you can have a bunch.
You guys don't. Yeah, but well, so Lancelot doesn't live in the castle. He wears all this armor and then he goes out into the woods.
and at night takes yes. he's completely commando, sleeping in the woods with yeah. his armor hanging over
yeah.
there.
Yeah,
he's what's got a trailer.
What's up with that?
he's got a trailer down by the river, but they don't show it.
How do you? I mean, I didn't get that. Sorry.
Did he not sleep in the castle ever?
No.
No, he slept out in the woods in the buff.
Yeah, yeah. That's yeah. when my son walked into the room, and he was just getting ready to stab himself with the sword, which was kind of cool. He was struggling with his own
yeah,
guilt,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And right. it's the wound. It's the wound. And my son turns the corner, and there's a naked Lancelot, like struggling around in the outdoors. And he's like, "What are you watching?
Yeah,
what are you watching?" Like, no, now stop. Don't judge it by that. Come back and watch more of this. Come on, dude.
But you know, you got to remember. He was French.
Okay.
So there's no accounting for the French.
And I had some final notes. Overall, I just thought very mythic. Again, you know, keep the dream. The king and the land are one.
Yeah.
The Grail theology is off a bit, actually. But, you know,
yeah.
the Grail, it wasn't about that.
I didn't get the Grail. Yeah, like, I didn't get any of the theology.
And clarify.
No,
more.
It felt like, don't you kind of feel like the movie could have ended before the Grail quest part?
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I know it was included in the legend, but he could have ended the movie without
that. I just
that.
Didn't make the connection. All of a sudden, they're searching for the Grail. You know, it's like...
And what did they say the Grail brought him? What was the truth? The truth of the Grail was a lie. It was not, like, biblically what it would have been. But what did they say it was?
No, but I mean, but Arthur like, was dying.
Mm-hmm.
Excalibur had
been shoved into the earth.
Yes.
Which was cool too, right?
Yeah.
That the earth and the dragon and the Merlin yeah. tied in thing, very mythic.
But Arthur was saying that, you know, the Excalibur has sort of failed and we need the Grail to bring the Camelot back together.
Yeah, but
bring
when
the
he,
world back together.
When Percival found it, then, like, the godly voice said something. I forget what he said. But whatever he said, that's not, like, biblical,
yeah.
New Testament-y stuff. It was more like self-centered.
Here's the Grail. Did he say that? Here's the Grail.
The truth is of the Grail is within you. Or no, what? What? No, no, no. No, it wouldn't have been that. But
yeah, yeah, that got a little obscure, and I felt like the movie was going on a little bit too long through the Grail part, even though those were all cool parts.
So it gets to the end. Spoiler alert. I thought they should have showed Mordred killing a bunch of people at the end before he appeared to kill Arthur. Do you remember he just appeared? Like, there's the battle,
mm-hmm.
and then yeah. then Mordred appears.
Right. In the cool armor.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
the cool helmet that you can't really see out of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, where's the eye holes in that?
Yeah.
Well,
there's
up with
what's
that?
Up there, yeah.
Yeah, there were little eye holes, but he could not have seen anything out of there.
That's why when I fight Mordred, I always just like to come at him a little bit at an angle. He never sees me coming.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Just sneak up on him, hit him on the head.
Yeah, you don't even have to go all the way behind him. He's yeah. a little bit off to the side there. But yeah, shouldn't they have had Mordred killing some dudes? They never showed him really killing
no,
anyone
they
else.
Didn't. Yeah, he wasn't as evil.
Yeah, you'd want to set him up as the big bad
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
in your video game or whatever. So.
Right.
He did condemn people to the tree, though, right? Wasn't that Mordred that did
yes.
that?
Yes,
yeah.
he did,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, as a little boy, yeah. But
yeah.
in the big epic final battle,
yeah.
he just
yeah.
appeared to die. And what was with the lightning striking the king? Do you remember that part?
Earlier on, yeah.
yeah. I just had a question. What was that? What was that about?
Yeah.
When was that?
I don't even remember.
It was in the scene where Morgana bewitches Arthur and they make a baby. And then they show this nasty birth of Mordred in the terrible storm.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah,
and
yeah,
lightning
yeah.
strikes Arthur. It's like when Mordred was born.
Okay.
Lightning strikes Arthur. I think it was then when he started getting really ill.
Yeah.
And looking, starting really
I'll
to
I'll
age.
Bet that was
yeah.
the symbolism of
yeah.
it then, yeah.
And it was at that point that he started the quest for the Grail. Like, we need something to do.
Yeah.
You guys need
yeah.
something to do.
Yeah.
We need to bring people together again.
And then I had a question about, like, well, the dragon was cool, but what is it really? Like the Force in Star Wars?
Or is yeah.
it man's connectedness to nature?
That's a good question. I don't really know. But it
yeah,
did appear kind
sure,
of
yeah.
as that kind of like that, yeah. But I don't really get that connection either.
Did you notice the crow thing? The crows? Black crows?
Yeah. The black crows?
They were there. I think.
Well, pulling the eyes out and stuff?
More. In the beginning, a lot of times they were with Merlin. So Merlin shows up and there's these black crows, right? And I think they knocked the guy off the horse onto the spears in the beginning of the movie.
Oh.
Crows flow at him.
Yes.
Cornwall.
Yeah, that's right.
Cornwall.
Yeah. And he falls over backward onto the lances.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, wait a minute then. The next scene, Merlin's coming up with crows behind him when he comes to get the baby from Arthur.
Oh, okay. That's brilliant.
And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. There's something going on with these crows.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I guess the problem as a director then is, you know, how do you get rid of all the crows that are just showing up in the background of the scenes?
Yeah.
Wait, yeah. I'm using you as a symbol. Get out of here. Get out of here, you crows.
Yeah. You crazy crows.
They just had to hire kids to throw rocks at blackbirds and crows that showed up in the background. Get them out of here.
Yeah, so Merlin was really sort of the power behind a lot of that. He set up a lot of this stuff and was... obviously, there was some desire there on Uther's part to go be with this woman
that he
couldn't
yes.
have with Cornwall and risk this... a war.
Yeah.
But Merlin was kind of behind him, knowing that he would get Arthur as a reward.
Yeah. He must have known it was coming, yeah.
Yeah, because he probably thought Uther was tarnished.
Yeah, so Merlin's not this, like, total clean-cut guy.
Yeah.
Right? But he knows
he's playing
the
card. He's playing the cards.
To bring about good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he wants there to be a good outcome.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling was always that he had a good intention behind it, But he said, you know, he kind of said that he was fading away, that, you know, the gods, the one god was replacing the gods of old, and the spirits of the forest were going silent, and he was going away. So he had kind of given up there toward the end.
And, well, I guess, probably Britain was becoming Christianized at that time, too.
Roman,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Arthur at the very end, and I did get chills a couple times in the movie. And there was the
Mike's just still laughing at us.
Yeah.
No.
Arthur tells Percival to go throw Excalibur back in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And I was kind of annoyed at this. Percival rides all the way to a lake.
Yes.
He gets ready to throw the sword, and then he thinks, hey, I'm not going to throw this sword in the lake. He rides all the way back to Arthur.
So what's up with that?
Yeah, what's up with that? Arthur's like, how'd that go, throwing that sword in the lake? How'd that go?
And then
you
went all the way
back. Was that cool? And he's like, oh, I didn't throw it in the lake. And Arthur goes, hey, you really got to do it.
Yeah.
So all the way back to the lake he goes.
Percival. Take Excalibur. Find a pool of calm water. Throw the sword into it.
No.
Obey me, Percival. Do it and return.
Throws it in, but the lady holds her hand up and grabs it and just pulls it down into the lake. It was like, and then Percival goes back, and Arthur is on the boat
on the dirge
with the three women
and going off into
the Grey Havens
or something.
Which the legend has that he is the once in future king. He will return.
So in England, then.
I don't know about the sword, probably, but the myth is Arthur waits to return.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you were kind of that way during World War II, people were looking for Arthur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there he was, Winston Churchill. Ask Rich.
And there was, I should have brought them, there's a great series of comic books that came out in 1983 called Camelot 3000, and the whole 12 issues. And the basis of it is that there's an alien invasion. And so this is Earth at its direst hours. And so Arthur comes back and finds Excalibur and defeats the aliens. It's really cool.
There you go.
So if you ever want to read those, Dave, I got those. Or Mike. Yeah. I'm sure. You're aching to read those.
You know, since we did these two shows back to back, I got to confess, I did get a little confused at times in Excalibur. I kept thinking it was the Sword of Shannara.
Yeah, I agree.
And then I would think, wait, what's that doing in this movie? Oh, wait, no, that's
Excalibur. The Sword of Shannara was a shabby little thing, though, wasn't it?
I think he overpainted it. He described paint chipping off of it at one
point.
Revealing some better sword.
The Excalibur was at least a nice sword.
You could never hide that puppy.
But it was, you know, parallel between the two was that Excalibur also was a sword of truth, and they talk about it a little bit. Yeah, Arthur says, "What's the greatest thing about being a knight? What is the most valued feature? Is it courage? Mm. Is it honor?"
Mm-hmm.
And Merlin said, "Truth. It's always truth. Right. Nothing but truth."
Yeah, and, you know, interestingly, if I can digress a moment, at school today, we showed the Japanese war crimes in World War II. And the stress was on the fact that these women threw themselves off the cliffs at Okinawa and at another island to suicide, with their children often, much to the American soldiers' horror. Why? Because they were told the Americans would chop them up. And it shows the little girl coming out with her flag surrendering, and she was told the Americans would eat us and kill us.
Mm.
But these old couple said, "You go on, surrender." And she went out and she said, "You know, I couldn't understand why he was smiling when he was going to kill me." And he had a little box. Well, it was a camera, so there's pictures of her and movies of her walking up. And they show that, and they interviewed the actual woman. It's very, very sad.
Wow.
And then they show a trembling child. I don't think it was her, may have been. And the kids, you know, it's the lie. And I said, "Kids, at the end of the year, I have a film from 60 Minutes where a Muslim guy went into prison in America, I think, and then he was converted to to terrorist kind of Islam. Then he came out and he saw other Islam that he was taught of peace and right."
Yeah.
"And he realized that he needed to go to the Middle East, and he would go, and he would meet with people in villages in Pakistan."
Hmm.
"And he would ask, 'How many mosques in America?' Guess what they would say?
Zero.
And he would say, 'Now, why do you believe there's zero mosques in America?' And they would say, 'Because America hates Islam and could never allow Muslims in their country.'" The lie. The lie that allows terrorism to exist at this level. The lie that allowed Japanese to have their own citizens commit suicide to avoid, you know, that's the lie that I tell my wife. That I did mop the floor when I didn't. Okay, one of those lies is not as big as the other.
Not as big. But still.
Right? And that's well taken. The truth, right?
Yeah.
Wow. What if we really applied that? And then we won't even get into politics.
No. Well, truth and politics don't really mix.
Not this year.
So, but this is a great story because of that, where it's just a beautiful, I think, a beautiful story. And well told. I know Mike won't agree, but have you seen other Arthurian sorts of movies that you like? Have you seen Camelot?
The musical?
Gosh, maybe a long time ago. Yeah.
The musical?
Yeah, I kind of thought that.
Never have either.
The Guinevere in this movie, I didn't really care for because she didn't look like Julie Andrews.
And there you go. That can ruin you also. For life.
She had really frizzy.
I liked her hair. She seemed more medieval. Seemed more medieval. Yeah.
Yeah.
To me. But anything else?
So, I think that was it.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. And remember that we will be back with another movie, so be watching movies. You may see the one that we're going to do. We don't know what it is yet.
What are the odds of that?
It's going to be amazing, though.
All right. Thanks. All right, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Spine
and sprocket.